A task force on child protection met for almost a year to review the state's laws designed to protect children from abuse and to determine whether they needed to be strengthened, reformed, and rewritten. The panel was formed in response in part to the crimes of Jerry Sandusky, found guilty of molesting eight boys from 1994 to 2009, and the, quote, conspiracy of silence involving administrators and coaches at Penn State University. The task force just released their findings and issued a long list of recommendations, and that's our topic for today's Radio Times. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. David Heckler is the district attorney of Bucks County, was appointed chairman of the Pennsylvania Task Force on Child Protection by Governor Tom Corbett. And David Heckler, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Also with us is Dr. Cindy Christian. She's director of Safe Place, the Center for Child Protection and Health at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She's also medical director for Philadelphia's Department of Human Services. And Cindy Christian, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
So nice to be back. Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. And David Heckler, this report is about more than just Jerry Sandusky, but nonetheless, if these recommendations had been in place, and we will talk about as many of them as we possibly can in this hour, would he have been caught earlier, prevented from abusing these young boys, and perhaps even imprisoned many years ago?
That's certainly my belief. The one of the key recommendations we make that we believe is feasible to be done from a financial standpoint. Many of the counties in which your listeners live have these already. Multidisciplinary investigative team, which brings together the police, prosecutors, the child welfare authorities, medical component. If that alone had been in place, mm-hmm. I firmly believe that the ball wouldn't have been dropped here. They had a case, and I've sort of avoided looking into the whole Sandusky, the background, aside from reading the Free report to see how it fed into what we were doing. They had a corroborated situation. Apparently Sandusky says in the hearing of two guys are hiding in a closet, I wish I could kill myself, apologizing to the mother of a boy. That's the kind of corroboration as a prosecutor you die for. That I can't understand why that case wasn't brought.
So
it should have been. And that was 10 years before, 12 years before the Attorney General's investigation.
And these recommendations, if accepted, would create much more communication, contact between these various parties involved.
In every, the MDIT, it's presently laid out in law, but it doesn't exist in many of the smaller counties in this state, like Center, and we would establish a CAC, which is the outgrowth of that. It involves a forensic interviewer without an axe to grind who has skills in talking to younger children in particular. If those, and we need one of those at least within 2 hours drive of every child in Pennsylvania.
Cindy Christian, let me turn to you because sure. This report and these recommendations looked at Pennsylvania's definition of child abuse, child sexual abuse, and says that really needs to be rewritten and some of the language changed. Tell us why and then what some of these language changes are.
Sure. So, you know, every state in the country defines child abuse for their own state. And historically, Pennsylvania has had the most narrow definition of child abuse, probably of any state. So, you know, I'm not going to read very much, but I want to just read kind of what our present definition is, okay? Because it's short, but it's telling. So it says, any recent act or failure to act by a perpetrator which causes non-accidental serious physical injury to a child, okay? So there are lots of issues with that definition. The first is, you know, what is exactly is non-accidental,
exactly.
Okay? It's up for enormous interpretation. And then serious physical injury is pretty significant and severe physical injury. Serious in our definitions means that the child has to be either in severe pain or there has to be some effect on a body organ. Like, so there has to be some negative effect for that, kind of an impairment of a physical function. And I can give you lots of examples where children are victims of child abuse. Clearly, anybody would say the child was terribly abused, right. But they're not in severe pain and they could be running around the hospital room. So our definitions have been so narrow that we don't capture all of the children who really are victims of abuse. And then after an investigation in Pennsylvania, if you don't know the identity of a perpetrator, because it could be one of multiple people in the household, those cases historically have been unfounded. They have not been counted as child abuse cases because we don't know that the perpetrator is someone who, in our definitions, has been responsible for the child's well-being.
Wow.
We really needed to look at that carefully.
Well, I know you also include a definition, conversations that are sexually explicit. So it's beyond whatever physical or sexual abuse that might take place, but also this. And why that?
Well, for the most part, the definitions of sexual abuse were not bad, but there were some areas where we wanted to just expand them to include, most child sexual abuse doesn't involve really the physical rape of children. So there are lots of things that adults do to children that are sexual, that are against the law, that are immoral, but they don't injure the child's body. They may not even touch the child's body. And so we wanted to just ensure that we've broadened that to include even more things that are clearly illegal and clearly should be included.
Did you want to add something, David?
That particular section, I think, also was aimed at the grooming behaviors that we see, particularly with regard to teachers, unfortunately, others with access to older kids who are getting closer to being sexually active. You see an awful lot of that kind of behavior.
This report also calls for expanding who should be required to report allegations of abuse. This whole duty to report. Can you expand on that, David Heckler?
You pretty well put it in a nutshell. There was such a limited range of people, and of course, in the school situation, which has been interpreted to apply to the Penn State situation, you didn't report directly. You didn't have a direct responsibility. We propose eliminating all of that. All reporters stand on the same basis, and we basically say that everybody who has a license for anything from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that deals with people in any way should be a mandated reporter, that they should sign an oath indicating they understand their responsibility to report, and that they commit a crime. Presently, it's a misdemeanor, the lowest misdemeanor. We would propose to raise it a bit, but we would include volunteers, others who deal with children, take responsibility for children over a period of time.
And who should they report to? And I think this, again, looking at Sandusky and some of these other cases, that's where I think this communication falls down.
Childline. Ideally, somebody will find an untaken three-digit number, like 911, a four-child line.
We want 611.
I know you want a three-digit number.
Want to make it easy for people,
right? As opposed to the whatever it is,
1-800-932-0313, that anybody in the state can call if they have a concern.
Right. But the idea of reducing that to three digits, you think will help people?
I think as simple as you can make it. But I think one of the things that we also discussed was that we also want to make sure that there shouldn't be a wrong door, right? So if you're concerned about something and you pick up the phone and you call 911 and you're going to get the police, okay, that shouldn't be a bad door. Mm-hmm. The police should know that they need to get to Childline and not send them a letter through the post office so that it sits on somebody's desk. That, as David said, these investigations need to be interdisciplinary. So child welfare needs to work with the police and get the DAs involved, and they all need to figure out who's the primary responsibility in this investigation, and then work together to ensure, because we have two systems. We have a civil system, that's the child welfare system, that protects children, and we have a criminal system, and that's the police and the district attorneys and prosecutors who hold people responsible for crimes. And sometimes we only get the child welfare system involved, sometimes we only get the police involved, and often we have both of them involved. So we want, any call to be a good call.
But would it be fair to say, David Heckler, that if these recommendations are accepted and I guess become the law, that if you deal with, work with children and you suspect something, then you should call Childline?
You are required.
You
must call Childline or the police. We're not going to prosecute you if if you report to the police or your local county child welfare agency, and not Childline. They're each obliged to call Childline, but certainly you can't sit on it, as has happened way too often in the past.
And these recommendations, I guess, increase the penalty for not reporting
a bit. It's be the equivalent of about your second or third DUI.
Okay.
But
that's okay.
Went right out of my
mind. But second or third DUI tells us this is serious.
Yes.
Right.
And then the other thing is, you know, we also ask the public and we ask our mandated reporters to report not what they are certain is child abuse, but what they suspect is child abuse. Because, you know, sometimes it's only after a complete investigation that you really know whether or not a child is a victim of abuse or not. And so built into those, you know, you are mandated to make this call and report what you are suspicious of, are protections for mandated reporters if they're reporting in good faith, right? That if you're wrong, like, the laws protect you from somebody turning around and suing you or, you know, claiming things against you. Your work is to try to protect children. And if you're doing that in a responsible way, we want to protect those people.
Cindy, you've been working in this field for a long, long time now. Would it be fair to say that most actual cases of child abuse, child sexual abuse, do not get reported?
Yeah, I think that
is... Like the majority do not get reported?
The majority do not get reported for many different reasons.
Such as?
One, it is sometimes difficult to recognize child abuse. I teach everybody, all of my medical students, I spoke to them last night. The way that we make diagnoses in medicine is we learn very early. We take a history, we do a physical exam, and by the end of our history and physical, we generally know what the patient's problem is. When children come in who are victims of abuse, okay, the history is missing purposefully or unintentionally.
Because you're not told,
the perpetrator doesn't want to tell you that they got frustrated with the child and beat them, or that they've been sexually abusing a child and now they have, you know, a sexually transmitted infection. They're not going to tell you those things. Or the person who brings a child is not the perpetrator, is a non-offending parent. So they don't honestly know all the time. So without your history, you know, it's very difficult to make the diagnosis. Even when doctors know that they're dealing with what they think might be child abuse, they often don't report. And we know that from our research, because they don't trust the child welfare system. They don't trust that the system is going to protect the children. They worry about, you know, that they're going to lose the family, that if they make that report, they may think it's safer to just keep their own eyes on a patient and on a family than make a report, and then it's out of your hands and you don't know what's going to happen. Lots of reasons people don't report, including children don't tell, right? They're too scared to tell.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation talking with Cindy Christian and David Heckler. They served on the Pennsylvania Task Force on Child Protection and have issued a report and a series of recommendations. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Also, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
CHF, the Chemical Heritage Foundation, supports WHYY. This first Friday, December 7th, CHF celebrates the holiday season with Ryan Burley of Shane Confectionery and the Franklin Fountain, who will share the history and science of candy making. Visitors can watch Burley's classic clear toy candy making process from start to finish, and samples will be available. More information online at chemheritage.org/firstfridays.
As the days get shorter, the air crisper, we know everyone's thoughts turn to tax deductions. There are only a few weeks until the year's end. Whether you give a general gift of membership, become a sustaining member, donate your car, or even gift your appreciated stock to WHYY, time is running out to make a tax-deductible donation. Explore the many ways to support WHYY. Call 1-888-345-WHYY or visit whyy.org/support.
The Princeton University Art Museum supports WHYY and presents Dancing into Dreams, Maya Vey's painting of the Ik Kingdom. Dancing into Dreams offers a glimpse into 8th century Maya court culture through elaborately decorated chocolate drinking cups. Paintings feature young princes playing ball, kings partaking in feasts, and the demons believed to cause sickness and misfortune. Details at artmuseum.princeton.edu.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking about some of the findings of the Pennsylvania Task Force on Child Protection. They met for just about a year, looking at all facets of Pennsylvania's child abuse protection laws, why the system didn't work under the case of Jerry Sandusky, now in prison. And our guests are Dave Heckler. He was appointed chair of the task force by Governor Tom Corbett. He's the DA of Bucks County. And Cindy Christian, director of Safe Place, that's the Center for Child Protection and Health at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, also medical director for Philadelphia's Department of Human Services. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Dave, let me go back to you, but I'm also interested in what Cindy says about this as well. And this is something that I think we learned from the investigation into Jerry Sandusky, a kind of game of telephone, if you will, which is that something that was seen, for instance, in the shower, looks like Jerry Sandusky was raping a boy in the shower. By the time that that got to officials in Penn State, including Coach Paterno and others, it became horsing around. The importance of using real language when talking about something like child abuse or child sexual abuse.
Well, it's that how anybody could have translated that particular activity into horsing around, that's the beginning of the cover-up right there. And I'm fascinated. There's been a chance for people to react a little bit to, and I see in one of the press reports that the school administrators group had some comment that, well, we like to be on top of what's going on, objecting to our removal of the requirement for schools that you report as a teacher first to your administrator. Of course they like to know. Hopefully they'll do the right thing, but they have every impetus to try and mute this. That's what we don't want. Under our proposals, you, as the person who saw this, must report directly to Childline, directly to law enforcement, and hopefully you will report exactly what you saw in plain language.
But you could also tell your administrator,
that's fine and dandy. In fact, I believe we require that the administrator be required, but that's be told, but that doesn't carry a criminal penalty.
But Cindy, and we've done a number of shows about Penn State and Sandusky, and what's so striking and disturbing is the kind of institutional denial. You see that in the Catholic Church as well, an institution's impulse to protect itself as opposed to protecting children. You've been doing this work for many years now. Do you understand that? Is there a way to move beyond that denial and self-protection?
Well, I don't understand it, okay? I'm sure it has something to do with money and power and prestige and institution, et cetera. But I don't understand it. I'm a pediatrician.
Right.
Okay? How could anybody protect an adult versus, an innocent child? So I do recognize, though, that these things are kind of swept under the rug, that people in the community don't even want to believe that this is possible. And it's my hope that these terrible cases have really been a tipping point almost, where kind of our population is waking up and saying, okay, this is real, this is common, this ruins children's emotional well-being, and it ruins people's lives into adulthood. So we really need to start thinking about how we prevent this. And as parents, and I want to put on my pediatrician's hat, how do we help our children, right, talk about these things so that, rape doesn't become horsing around? And one of the ways we do that is we start very young with children, and we teach them the names of their genitals while we're teaching them their eyes and their ears and their belly buttons. And we have open communication. And we tell children from the youngest age that we don't keep secrets between children and parents, and that whether it's good or bad or happy or sad, a child should be able to talk to a parent about anything, okay? And then use these news, events to discuss this at the dinner table or when you're watching the news or, just open conversations or let children know that they can tell you anything. So, and those are important. It's not like you don't have a conversation about sex with children. You have ongoing conversations about secrecy and openness and sharing.
this maybe is more your DA hat, but what I often find interesting is that when you look at children who drop out of school, who get in trouble with the law, who have problems with drugs and alcohol, all the, you know, the not all, but a lot of the social problems that we have to deal with, and you find out about them, you often find that they've been a victim of sexual or physical abuse.
Absolutely, and to a degree that beggars my imagination. It's one of the, we were blessed with a wonderful team of doctors on our task force. Dr. Berger from the Children's Hospital out in Pittsburgh mentioned, I believe, in our closing remarks, and I always drop the word. I'm forever forgetting words. It's a consciousness in the community, only that's not the one word, because the governor picked it up in his response. We really need to be more open and aware as a society, a community in Pennsylvania at least, that this happens, both the physical and the sexual. It's one of the things made me willing to, more than happy to leave the bench in some ways, because I tried an awful lot of these cases, and there is no, it makes me think in terms of cruel and unusual punishment at the end of the day, which is really not appropriate, but it's a terrible problem, but one that can be dealt with rationally if people are aware. And by the way, one of our many proposals in here, this thing is really dense, is that we make it a specific crime with enhanced penalties to fail to report, to cover up others' conduct, particularly for the sake of protecting either an individual or an institution.
Go ahead, Cindy, then we'll get to our callers.
I think the term was, we really need a change in culture.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We really need...
You're his brain, I can see.
We really need... Not really.
In many
but,
ways.
But we need our population to say, yes, we care about children. We're all on the lookout. We're going to protect children, whether that's your own child or a relative or a child who's in your library or in your class or in your university, right? Adolescents, they all deserve protection. And we don't really have that culture quite yet.
What do you hope happens? I mean, I know you don't want this to gather dust somewhere, this report and these recommendations. It sounds like you're calling for some changes in the law.
Many
changes in law, which of course requires the legislature to get involved. And it also sounds like there's a need for more resources to make the system work better.
Well, I'm sure the resources are tight in these years. I'm sure the legislature will make a rapid response. There are a lot of changes here that maybe will have some increased impact in years to come, but they're just needed, and if it costs more, it costs more. There are other structural changes that I think probably will take longer, and we really began a discussion, and that's what I propose. What I'm sure people are going to look at this in Harrisburg and say, my gosh, she's proposing three different, a task force, an advisory council, and an academy, and why are we doing all this? This discussion needs to go on for years. CACs, which are one of the big solutions right now,
Child Advocacy Centers,
where we don't have them, they're today's step forward. There are going to be more steps forward as time goes on. We have wonderful academic resources in this state. We need to bring them together with government and have this dialogue about putting children first through the years.
That's David Heckler. Dave Heckler, and he was appointed chair of the Pennsylvania Task Force on Child Protection. Cindy Christian served on this task force, and they have issued a series of recommendations, a report, and we are talking about some of their findings, the implications of their findings, and the problem of the abuse and sexual abuse of children here in the state of Pennsylvania. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Stephanie from, looks like Galloway, New Jersey, to join us. And Stephanie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
This is fascinating, both intellectually and also on a personal level. I live in New Jersey now, but I grew up in Pennsylvania and was sexually assaulted on a very regular basis by my father from pre-verbal age into teenhood. told teachers, told nurses. We moved a lot, but we were in Pennsylvania. So, you know, various school nurses usually, and family members, and nothing was ever done. And here I am, you know, in adulthood, after having kind of gone through some pretty awful memories in adulthood, and then going into therapy, and then attempting to seek some kind of either charges against my father or even a civil suit against my father, and just being told really that there was no recourse at all because the laws, at least, you know, at that time, there was no protection. And I think one of the things that your panelist said about a change in culture is huge. I think that we have minimization and justification for assaulting, for sexualizing children, because it's what we do as a culture.
Mm-hmm.
We accept it, we encourage it, and I think mm-hmm. that so many people have been sexually abused, inappropriately handled, even hands-off offending, that it's made our ability to recognize real assault of children in our care a difficult one.
Well, Stephanie, first of all, I appreciate your call to Radio Times, and we're all, you know, frankly, sad and heartbroken about what happened to you, but clearly
you
have some important things to tell us, and I do want to give Cindy Christian a chance to weigh in on this. Your thoughts, Cindy?
Sure. Well, I think the first thought that I have is that I've seen so many parents of children who are victims, and they're often more traumatized about what happened to their children than the children are, because the children, if they're young, they don't have an adult concept of what has happened to them. They may not have been physically injured, okay? But parents are extremely traumatized, and I often ask parents if they have their own previous history of sexual abuse, and I can't tell you how often they acknowledge that really? They were sexually abused as a child. And like our caller, they may have told people, and there was really no adequate response. And on occasion, I'm the first person that the parent has actually kind of told that they'd been a victim of sexual abuse.
So they kept it a secret.
So they right. Children keep it secrets, and adults keep it secret. And I really do hope that, you know, now kind of in our generation now, that kind of secrecy and inaction is going to be less and less and less. I think that children are believed more. I think that we have as a society some response. And really our work is focused on kind of going forward, on how do we protect children to the best of our ability so that this doesn't happen a generation from now, so that you know, we address the problem when we recognize it, we hold people responsible, and we get mm-hmm. children and their families help when they need it.
Dave Heckler, you had mentioned earlier about the kind of, I guess, team interview, if there is an allegation, and the importance, I guess, of the kind of sensitive questioning of a young child who is alleging some kind of abuse.
And that's what the CAC provides, a trained, neutral examiner. Objective is to get at the truth, not to turn the child into a witness for the prosecution, but just get at the truth. And it's very unfortunate that, of course, that's come along in the last decade, maybe. But before that, you had an awful lot of people in law enforcement. I would have been one of them who really didn't know how to handle the issue. Too many men in the system, going back historically, hopefully we're doing better today.
Stephanie, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Joanne from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Joanne, go ahead. You're on the air. Hi, you're on the air, Joanne.
Oh, hi, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is, I was curious what your guests think about how the laws regulating the statute of limitations for child sex abuse changes will change in Pennsylvania going forward.
And Joanne, I have to say we have a third guest will be joining us to talk in more detail about that. But let me give, I guess, Dave Heck, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that.
We may both want to, but at any rate, right now, you can bring a criminal action any child who were victimized today, effectively up until they are 50 years of age, which is a heck of a long time. I wonder how we would manage to prosecute such a case. But for criminal matters, it's the statute doesn't seem today to be much of a factor. However, if the shorter statutes of limitations which existed previously, once they run, you can't extend them for criminal matters. That's mm-hmm. It's an ex post facto law. We can thank Thomas Jefferson and the Bill of Rights. Civilly, presently, you have until you are 30 years of age, effectively, to bring an action, essentially 12 years after you turn 18. Again, the statutes used to be shorter, and I'm sure there are many people who cannot sue who would wish to. Our charge with regard to the task force was to look at the well-being of children today. We had, for all the same reasons that we had a wonderful task force in terms of prosecutors, lawyers trained in the Child Protective Services, juvenile court judge, and primarily doctors, we would probably not have been the right panel to take up the questions that would occur to me as a lawyer or former judge about, well, civilly, do we want to extend this to open a window? Some states have opened a window. I think your next person you're going to have on advocates this. A number of issues spring to my mind, including if there's a problem, what trial lawyers do for it is. I have my doubts, but
hold on to that thought too. Let me give you a chance to weigh in on that, Cindy. I know you're not a lawyer, but you must have dealt with or thought about this statute of limitation.
Yeah, but I'm really not a lawyer. Although yes. I've learned to read legislation, and that was kind of fun.
actually,
a new skill, right? I recently moderated a panel up at Penn State. Probably they had a 2-day sexual abuse conference, and I moderated a panel. Open to the public the night before the main conference, and we had a state representative. I don't think she would mind me saying her name. She's out in public, Louise Bishop, who was just wonderful, and two other adult victims. And I think she, she really waited until she was well into adulthood to kind of disclose and recognize publicly her past abuse. And I know from her and that these issues of being able to have some recourse in the courts is very, very important. We focused on a lot of issues. We didn't hear any testimony about kind of the statute of limitations. It was something that we didn't really discuss at length. But in my mind, I think there are individuals to whom that is very important. And, our task force, these are recommendations. We're sure that there'll be some other people with other recommendations. And, there's still the ability to do that.
Well, I'm sure we will have recommendations after this very short break. We're talking with Cindy Christian and Dave Heckler. They both served on the Pennsylvania Task Force on Child Protection. One open line at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, Dave and Aaron go to work. Created and performed by Barrymore Award-winning Philadelphia artists Dave Jotico and Aaron Cromie. Dave and Aaron Go to Work harkens back to the days of Laurel and Hardy, Charlie Chaplin, and Buster Keaton in a wordless comedy for all ages. Tickets for Dave and Aaron Go to Work are available now at 215-592-9560 or at 1812productions.org.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. The militant group Hamas may have emerged stronger from the recent conflict with Israel, but the group's future may depend more on the long-term outcome of the revolutions in Egypt and Syria. Also, a kitchen confidential for hotels. A former parking valet gives readers a behind-the-scenes look. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Temple University's Fox School of Business part-time MBA program supports WHYY. Temple University's Fox School of Business part-time MBA is now accepting applications for classes beginning in January. With evening and weekend classes offered at convenient locations, including Center City, you can complete your MBA in as little as 20 months. Temple University's Fox School of Business. Discover the power of Fox. Details online at fox.temple.edu/PMBA. That's fox.temple.edu/PMBA.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. The crimes of Jerry Sandusky and the silence around those crimes raise a host of concerns and questions about Pennsylvania's laws protecting children from sexual and physical abuse. A task force was formed to make recommendations. They've issued a new report, and two of the participants of that task force, our guests, are on Radio Times today. Dave Heckler, Bucks County District Attorney, chair of the task force, and physician Cindy Christian, director of the Safe Place Program, and that's at CHOP. One of the critics of the report is David Clossy, and he's executive director of SNAP, and he joins us now and in this portion of Radio Times. And David Clossy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We've been talking about the report and just had a call about this statute of limitations, and I know that's one of your criticisms of the report. What did you want the report to say or do about statute of limitations?
Well, for several years, there's been a bill pending in the Pennsylvania legislature to create a one-year civil window, which would allow victims to expose predators in court. We had hoped that the report would address that and address statute of limitations reform in general. We believe, based on 24 years of experience, we in SNAP believe that reforming or repealing the statute of limitations, this archaic, arbitrary, predator-friendly deadline, would simply open the courthouse doors to more victims and enable them to protect more kids by exposing more predators. And we think it would be a much more effective way to address the crisis than changing the mandatory reporting statutes.
And how would this window work? You're saying a year window. How would that work?
Essentially, what it does is it suspends or repeals the statute of limitations for any child sex crime committed by anyone within the state.
At any time?
Right. So Delaware, Hawaii, and California have passed these laws. And in California, which was the first to do it almost a decade ago, literally hundreds of child molesting coaches and teachers and ministers were exposed and suspended or stepped down from positions around kids. And some of them then were subsequently able to be criminally prosecuted based on evidence that had been gained through civil lawsuits. In our experience, mandatory reporting laws have very light penalties and are very, very rarely used. So whereas we think the civil justice system, just like the criminal justice system, overall does a very good job of ferreting the truth out and exposing wrongdoing and therefore helping to deter wrongdoing in the future.
Well, David Clossy, let me give Dave Heckler a chance to respond to that. And I know this is not part of the report, but I'd be curious about your idea of this window.
Well, I'm familiar with the concept. Nobody, we proceeded on the basis of testimony. Don't recall, I'm pretty confident that we didn't get any request from anybody to put this issue, that would have put this issue in play. Again, our focus was on children, and I'm wondering if Mr. Clossy could indicate how young the youngest of the people who are deprived of the ability to bring a suit in Pennsylvania are at this juncture.
David Clossy?
Well, I'm certainly not an attorney, but I would suspect it's late 20s, early 30s. But frankly, let's assume the worst. Let's assume a 55-year-old victim comes forward. Mm. His or her perpetrator might be 75, might be 80, but might still be molesting kids today. The important thing, we think, is to give all child sex abuse victims the opportunity that other crime victims have to go into the time-tested, open American justice system and seek justice and expose criminal behavior, whether it's the actual committing of child sex crimes or the concealing of child sex crimes. And we also have seen anecdotally where some institutions in these states, Delaware, Hawaii, and California, are acting more responsibly now when they get reports of child sex abuse, current child sex abuse. And in part, we suspect it's because their lawyers, their civil lawyers, are saying to them, hey, don't forget, you all might be sued for this even years down the road. So, you know, don't try to sweep it under the rug. Don't try to ignore it the way so many other institutions like the Catholic Church have done and continue to do.
I'd be curious again, Dave Heckler, your response. And I do want to get back to our callers and perhaps even
sure.
Cindy.
Well, ever since the Pinto gas tank, the trial lawyer has been sort of conjured as the solution to problems in our society. From a personal standpoint, I'm not much of a buyer. These actions are brought to recover civil damages, and that's where you get into a problem. Somebody comes along 15, 20, 25 years later, and it generally is just going to be oath on oath. If we have time for a brief anecdote, we in my prosecution role, we found a guy who was stealing just in the last couple of years from a local charity for whom he worked. In our investigation, we discovered he was depositing checks from the Archdiocese of Philadelphia. The Archdiocese wanted nothing to do with this. They were happy to pay him. He claimed he had been a victim of abuse, and they were paying for his, quote, counseling. We advised them. He's not getting counseling. In fact, some of the money he was receiving from them went for his girlfriend's breast augmentation operation. They were happy to pay because, of course, they're doing their thing, and I for which I have no sympathy. But along with the valid cases, you have an invitation to invalid cases, especially at target defendants like the church has made itself. And I'm not sure how you thrash that out. It's a legitimate subject for discussion, not one that fell in our purview.
In fact, only because for the sake of time and the fact that we have a full bank of calls, and perhaps we can revisit this topic for another discussion. David Klossy, I have to say goodbye to you, but we have talked to members of SNAP before, talking about the Survivors Network of those abused by priests, and I appreciate you joining us even briefly on Radio Times.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
You're welcome. And again, David Klossy, Executive Director of SNAP, staying with us for the rest of the hour. We do have a full bank of calls. We have Cindy Christian and Dave Heckler. Let me get, looks like Fred from Wayne to join our conversation. And Fred, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I used to work about 10 years ago as a counselor in a youth agency. And one of the things that always annoyed me was that if a child was abused and it was not by somebody in their custody or so-called protection of them, Childline wouldn't do anything about it. And so it was up to the family to report it to the police in order to have action taken. Mm-hmm. Often the child, let's say it's a teenager and a young child, and often the young child would not want to report on his friend, and the family might consider that person a friend and not want to get them into trouble. And so often it was very frustrating to work with a child who had been abused where that child had not been in the custody of somebody else. I would like to know whether or not, under the current guidelines, there's more cooperation between Childline and the police, so the Childline will
sure.
take some responsibility of at least coordinating or calling the police or getting them involved where the parent perhaps doesn't want to have that action taken but is necessary in order for the abuse to be addressed.
Indeed. And Fred, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I'm giving that to Cindy Christian. Cindy?
Sure. Thank you, Fred. The quick answer is yes, we want Childline to take those calls and those reports. And we do feel that there really needs to be an investment in Childline in many different ways. It's fairly antiquated. If we're going to put some resources somewhere, I think some of them ought to go towards Childline, right? They're our, kind of our state centralized hotline acceptance. But I also want everybody to understand that, you know, that child welfare agencies are there to ensure the safety and well-being of children in their home environments. And so there are situations where crimes have been committed against children, but children are safe in their home environment. So they may be sexually assaulted by a stranger or somebody in the school system, but they're fine at home and their parents are taking good care of them. And then we don't really need the child welfare agency in that family, but we do need a criminal investigation and a response. So that I would agree that what we want is, remember, no wrong phone call. If you call Childline, they don't say, no, we're sorry, goodbye, call 911. They say, yes, thank you, we will call 911, or we will get that to the police, and we will also like make sure that, that the child welfare system doesn't need to play a role in this. And they may make a visit, but as long as they know that the child's safe, they can back off.
Well, and picking up on Childline, you both had talked about a three-digit number as opposed to the number of digits. Now, Davis, does it also require more people working the Childline, better training for people working Childline?
Actually, one of the solutions that was simply brought forward that the unions are actually in agreement on and hopefully will be happening is the use of more part-time workers, which you generally don't see. But so they need more folks, but it haven't necessarily been so much starved of them as just having work rule difficulties. Maybe the most useful thing we will have recommended in all this, the law was adopted in the 70s. It's very specific as to how communication shall take place. We're expanding that, including email. And frankly, that may liberate an awful lot of the time that is taken. And part of the problem that these people may be having is child welfare is by county, police are by much smaller jurisdictions in a lot of places, and so you just have workers who are liable to have to spend a half an hour figuring out what jurisdiction. So hopefully we can solve some of those problems by coming at least into the 20th century with the electronic communications.
Wouldn't that be nice? Fred, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Denise from Pottstown has to say. Denise, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Hi there. I'm a public librarian, and since the mandated reporters laws have come out, we in the public library world have been wondering if we are mandated reporters or not. The law is not very clear. And some solicitors have told us yes, and some have said no. And we're very confused, and it's a liability issue for us and all these other things. So I would like to hear what your panelists have to say.
Well, you called the right place, Denise. Go ahead, Dave.
I blush. I'd have to look it up in the present law. Under the law we proposed, you absolutely would be. You would be required to get training, and you would be required to sign an oath so that there would be absolutely no ambiguity in your mind about your responsibilities. But you're right. A ton of the folks who are presently mandated reporters under the existing CPSL don't know it, and they're not required to get training. And it's therefore very ineffective.
This new list, proposal list, includes film processors, right?
Yes.
Is that new?
Well, that's cropped up in other pornography laws, and of course, just at the time when film's going out of vogue. But yes, over the years, it's a surprising number of pornography cases and child abuse, the victimization of children, have been brought to the attention of police by film processors.
Denise, thanks for the call. Let's see what Jose from Willingboro has to say. Jose, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
Good morning.
I'd
like to discuss the issue of integrating community-based organizations into the support system. It seems like institutions, human services, the legal system, seem to have a reputation on the streets of being very heavy-handed and not making victims of victims again. Could you address that?
No, I think it's good. It's a good question. Yeah, go ahead, Cindy.
I think it's a very good question. I can talk about Philadelphia. We didn't really address that in kind of the task force work, but here in Philadelphia, I think there's been a recognition over the last 5 to 7 years that our child welfare work really should be more and more community-based. And actually, we are making very important steps towards that in Philadelphia so that we're going to begin to really localize the work and bring our child welfare agency into kind of communities and try to keep children in their communities. If they need to be removed from parents, keep them in their communities, keep them in their schools, and have really more of a partnership with community agencies to break down Philadelphia kind of into smaller regions and districts. And then also really try to work to improve the transparency that child welfare has with the public and with the community, so that you know, people don't think that all DHS does or all that child welfare does is remove children and they're bad, because really what child welfare agencies try to do is to work to improve kind of how families function and how children are protected. So I agree with the caller that those are important things.
Jose, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Cindy, let me begin or end with you. And this is obviously such a difficult topic to talk about, but I think even from one of our callers, the idea that people can recover from abuse, mm-hmm. from child abuse, from sexual abuse, from horrible abuse. I mean, whether through therapy, counseling, supportive services.
That is so true, and it's so important. There have been a series of research studies that have shown that when children live in households where there's abuse and domestic violence and drug abuse by parents, that their adult physical health is significantly affected. That, you know, when children are victims of abuse, when they live in dysfunctional households, they have higher rates of heart disease and cancer and obesity and depression and drug addiction and all the things that really lead to adult morbidity and early mortality. And we know that if children can be protected and children can be supportive, And parents can be helped to protect their children as well, and kids can get therapy, and parents can get therapy too, that we can really decrease the emotional negativity that's associated with all of this abuse.
Well, much more to talk about. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. We've been talking about the findings, the results of the Pennsylvania Task Force on Child Protection, and our guests have been Dave Heckler, he's Bucks County's district attorney, and Cindy Christian, director of Safe Place, the Center for Child Protection and Health at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She's also medical director for Philadelphia's Department of Human Services. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us. And do stay with us for Here and Now that comes your way next here.